in demand, in system demand here in New England. So the obvious question is, what's going on? Why isn't more pipeline capacity being developed? And there are a couple of factors to keep in mind. First and foremost, the folks that I represent, Spectra Energy, are so-called common carriers. They are open-access, non-discriminatory pipelines with rates and facilities being developed determined by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. They must demonstrate a public need for the facilities. In addition, pipelines, as you've heard previously, have historically been developed on basically the backs of local distribution company customers. They're the ones who finance the interstate natural gas pipeline facilities by asking for service. That's the way folks like my client, Spectra Energy, demonstrate to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that there's market need, that there's a so-called public convenience and necessity for the proposed facilities. So I'd be happy to talk a little bit more about that, but I can see that my time is up, and I don't want Representative O'Connor to have to interrupt me. So I'll conclude there, Mr. Chairman, hopefully causing a few questions to be raised.
Yes, Representative Rogerson.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. I was wondering if you could explain some of the things that you didn't quite finish in your last presentation.
Thank you so much, Representative Rogerson. So beyond needing a FERC certificate, and the reason for that is the Natural Gas Act that Congress passed a number of years ago requires that obviously there be a demonstrable public need. And that's because the government provides to private companies an enormous power, the ability of to take property under condemnation through eminent domain. It's not exercised very often, but it is that's an enormous responsibility, and therefore there are very rigorous standards that have to be met. In addition, as I was describing, local distribution companies have to prepare for the coldest days. They call it a design day, and they're the ones who then buy a path, and pipelines then seek to meet that demand from local distribution companies and build out their systems. Now, natural gas pipeline systems historically in cold weather areas have been much larger than the vast majority of time in which the systems operate. So let me give you a quick example. On the coldest winter days here in New England, the local distribution companies around the region require about 4.5 billion cubic feet of natural gas. That would be at, say, 0 degrees in the Boston metropolitan area. A swing of 24 degrees means that there'll be a reduction in demand from LDCs of over 1.5 billion cubic feet. So 1.5 BCF. In the summertime, LDCs in New England only use about 0.6 BCF. So what happens to that excess capacity? Well, it's released to the market, and electric generators and other users buy that capacity at very efficient rates in order to generate electricity. The problem becomes on the 10 to 12 very cold winter days, there simply is not enough pipeline capacity in the region to allow natural gas-fired generators to meet the electricity demands. So, for example, today there is about a peak day demand on ISO New England of about 17,250 megawatts. 43% of that electricity is being generated by gas-fired facilities today. If it were -5 out, there's no way that 43% of those 17,000 megawatts could be fired by electric-fired generation. Now, just as a quick addition, thank you, Representative Rogerson, I appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit more. On the Algonquin and Maritime systems combined, that's Spectra Energy's facilities here in New England, 60% of the gas-fired generation are on those systems, about 9,700 megawatts. So the Algonquin and Maritime systems really are the backbone of the gas-fired generation in the region. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any of the questions that other members might have.
Now, with the increase that you mentioned when you first started speaking, how has that benefited Maine, or is it benefiting other areas more so than Maine?
Mr. Chairman, the increase that just went into service on January 7th actually benefits the whole region, including Maine. And the central reason for that is in the system, there are a number of bottlenecks, and Algonquin Incremental Market, AIM, did eliminate some of those bottlenecks on many of the most high-demand days. It doesn't eliminate all of them, but it is a substantial increase on the system. There's only about 4 billion cubic feet of inbound capacity here in New England. And that increase of 342,000 is important, particularly at places like Burrillville, where there's a constriction point that affects negatively the ability to get enough gas into the region in order to serve natural gas fired generation. The reason it helps Maine is because, of course, what we always want on an hourly and daily basis is for the most efficient, lowest cost electric generators to bid into the bid stack so that the high cost producers don't have to bid in. Furthermore, the most ironic thing about the ability to permit natural gas pipeline facilities today is the vehement opposition of the environmental community. And the irony in that is that on the coldest winter days, New England, that still has about 20% of its installed capacity in oil and coal-fired facilities, those facilities get turned on because we don't have enough natural gas infrastructure. I've got a terrific chart that Gordon Van Welle from ISO New England I'll have reproduced to give to the committee. All these red amounts in February of 14, that's the amount of electricity in the total system being generated by oil-fired facilities on those successive days. Extremely expensive electricity because those are facilities that hardly ever operate, some of them as old as 40 years, and highly polluting facilities. So that's the irony of pipeline projects being held by the environmental community. For a number of weeks of the year, oil-fired facilities are running that are highly polluting.
Representative Ragson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was always of the impression that truck delivery of say, LNG was much more dangerous than pipeline. But I recently read that when there is a pipeline accident, the volume is much greater than in a truck accident with LNG. So, but I'm not sure. I may be wrong. This may be an oil statistics rather than gas. So I just wondered if you knew anything about that.
Well, there is a fair amount of LNG that's trucked around the region, mostly from the Distragas facility outside Boston, including to some storage facilities here in Maine. I'm not aware of any LNG truck-related accidents. Of course, the amount of BTUs that are on a truck are fairly limited, even though there's an enormous concentration of BTUs because of the compression of the natural gas to be turned into LNG. There is a lot of storage around New England that most people aren't aware of. There are over 45 LNG peak shaving facilities. They store over 16 billion cubic feet. The district gas facility is another 3.4 billion cubic feet. So, you know, there is a fair amount of storage. We really need more storage, and we need more pipeline. By and large, back on safety, the interstate transmission system is the safest mode of energy transportation. It's not even close. The U.S. Department of Transportation puts out statistics annually. They equalize the delivery of so-called BTUs per distance traveled, and it's not even close. The interstate pipeline system is far and away the safest system in the U.S.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your and the committee's time.
Bob Duckel.